As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
Good Sunday morning and happy Easter, or happy 420, depending on what you're celebrating this morning. Thanks for being with us here on WEEI just after 10 a.m. here on Sunday, April the 20th, 2025. A million and one different things to talk about today here on WEEI, so thanks for being with us. You can join the conversation at any point at 617-779-7937. That's how you call. That's how you text if you want to jump in. During the course of the show today, we'll touch on the New England Patriots, as thankfully the NFL draft is less than a week away. I know it's fun. It's been the topic of conversation. Honestly, the draft has been the topic of conversation for longer than just the offseason after that debacle of a victory for the Patriots over the Buffalo Bills. Well before that, we were talking about the draft and who this team was going to add near the top of the draft board for quite a while. But the draft is mercifully here, so we can finally find out if the Patriots actually think that Will Campbell's arms are too short or not. So we'll talk about that in addition to a fascinating rumor that came out of the show that myself and my producer today, Brian Frazoco, work on, WEEI Afternoons. Brian, good morning, my friend. How are you?
Morning. Happy Easter, man.
Happy Easter to you. Thanks for being here on this morning into early afternoon. We'll take you up into coverage of Red Sox baseball. Game number 3, Red Sox and the White Sox this afternoon at Fenway Park. Sox have won the first two. And what has been a bit of a roller coaster start to the season, they've strung together multiple win streaks of 4 games or more. They've also had a couple losing streaks mixed in there as well, but they're back over 500 by multiple games, looking to go a season high 3 games over 500 here on this Sunday and pick up a series victory in the process. So Patriots on the table, Red Sox on the table as they get ready for game 3, and of course the Boston Celtics as they begin their title defense this afternoon. Orlando Magic, a team that presents some interesting challenges, and great to hear our guy Justin Turpin of WEEI and WEEI.com on with KJ right before this, breaking down the statistical look at how the Orlando Magic and the Boston Celtics match up. So we'll get into that. The Bruins are still at least on the radar. I'm a psycho and still care about hockey, even though they've long since been eliminated from playoff contention. And the reason I bring them up and why we will bring them up is that Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet floated the possible idea of a Jeremy Swayman trade. If you can wrap your head around that, I'm not sure that any team in their right mind would actually get into business with the Bruins on Jeremy Swayman, but for some reason, he still thinks that teams may be kicking the tires on all of that. So all that will be on the radar here today as we take you up until about 12:30 or so before we get you in to Red Sox pregame coverage. MassMutual pregame show will come your way, then we'll send it out to the booth at Fenway just a little bit after that. But we begin on the gridiron, and we begin with a clip that, and my man Brian runs the social, does a fantastic job for the EEI Afternoons account. So he was the one who pressed send on a video showcasing the three-point stance call-in version from co-host on the afternoon show, Nick Fitzy Stevens. We got the text before the show from him that said, hey, I might have a little something. I have a little source that's ringing in my ear. And so when 3 o'clock came around, Ted Johnson came in. We did our 3-point stance. Nick called the hotline here at WEEI, and he shared with us some interesting information about a trade rumor that had been floated out to him earlier that day.
Earlier today, a little birdie with some really good intelligence, a well-sourced phone call, came to me to offer this possible scenario. If somebody that we wanted the Patriots to select very badly, Abdul Carter, were to fall to fourth, and I know this scenario is slightly unlikely, if he were to fall at fourth overall, how would you feel about a certain team that recently won the Super Bowl calling up your New England Patriots in desperation and want of Abdul Carter and offering a certain wide receiver who has admitted that he loves New England and would love to play for the Patriots and possibly more selections in a blockbuster draft day trade?
Okay, so again, that was Nick Fitzy-Stevens on WEEI Afternoons on Friday afternoon, floating the idea that the Patriots could get into business with the Philadelphia Eagles if, and only if, something that's a relative possibility, that Abdul Carter were to fall to number four to the Patriots, the Eagles would be on the phone making a call and offering their top wide receiver and A.J. Brown, and one of the most important pieces, if not the most important piece, to that offense in Philadelphia, that offense that, you know, just won a Super Bowl. So first, I want to hear from you at 617-779-7937. Do you like this? Do you not like this? What did you make of the rumor that's floated around? Because this got picked up in Philadelphia, and you know Philly fans, always reasonable and rational when responding to rumors that are especially against some of their favorite teams. So the arguments that came out of this rumor that was floated by Fitzy on Friday were wide-ranging. And my favorites were the ones that started playing amateur capologist in the comments of the tweet that was put out there. So I went in and decided to play my own amateur capology. People were responding back and saying that the Eagles are going to get hit with a $90 million dead cap hit if you make that trade. That's a version of the truth. The full contract value, if he were to be cut before June 1st, is $89,972,199. That's a bit different than what's going on here. So instead, if you change your settings on overthecap.com and change it to a pre-June 1st trade, it's still a significant number that Howie Roseman would have to stomach. It's $59,802,199 dead cap that the Philadelphia Eagles would have to deal with if this trade was made. So it's not $90 million, but it's still well on its way. You're talking about two-thirds of that, and a number that a team that is still very likely competing for a Super Bowl in 2025, I guess technically 26 as well, would probably not want to stomach at this point in time. So you do have to take into account the salary cap implications of making this trade, because A.J. Brown at age 28, 6'1", 225 pounds, second rounder back in 2019 of the, and this is where all these rumors come from, the Tennessee Titans. A.J. Brown will be connected to the Patriots via Mike Vrabel forever and ever, amen. And it's very consistent with the way that Vrabel and the front office, so Vrabel, have run things this offseason, which is bringing in guys that he is familiar with. These are guys that he has either coached or guys that he has worked with on staff before. So you have to be aware of what the salary cap implications are, because it's irresponsible not to. But let's throw caution to the wind for a moment. Let's say for one reason or another, the Eagles may be okay with stomaching a $60 million salary cap hit or dead cap hit, or they're willing to try to work around this, and the player is willing to work around this. There's some restructure that can happen that can move money around in a way that can make this happen. Are you interested then? Take the salary cap out of it, though I think that's going to be the prohibitive factor in all of this. Are you interested? Brian Fazoka, are you interested in this? Take the cap out of it. Are you interested in this deal?
I'd be interested in it. I still don't have a lot of confidence that Stephon Diggs will be the player he was in Buffalo or Minnesota when he returns from his ACL injury. He's 31, I want to say,
right,
coming off a significant injury. I think they don't have a lot of weapons around your quarterback. I would be interested in it. Of course, you are passing on the prospect of of Abdul Carter.
Right.
But I'm always of the mindset of take the proven talent. I think A.J. Brown's a proven talent, so I would take that trade. Again, tell me what else you're getting for him. Are you getting the 32nd pick? Are you getting a second round pick? What else are you getting? But I'd be interested in it for sure.
Yeah, it's a good point that you bring up. Is it 4 for A.J. Brown and 32? Is it 4 for A.J. Brown and their second rounder, which would sit at 64? It's 4 for, according to Fitzy, it's A.J. Brown plus in exchange for getting a guy that then the Patriots wouldn't want, but now the Eagles are gung-ho to have. The whole thing is fascinating to me, but for those that would argue against it and say this is inconsistent with what the Patriots are trying to do, which is build out through the draft, and it kind of changes the timeline of your rebuild that you're going through under Mike Vrabel, I would push back and say the Patriots have spent more money than anybody this offseason. They have added on every level of the defense proven NFL caliber players to try to improve their defense in a hurry and make their defense a playoff caliber group.
Not to mention, didn't they get a 35-36-year-old right tackle? How does that work for the future exactly?
Exactly, yes. So you're talking out of both sides of your mouth where you're saying, well, I don't want to risk the future in the draft for and risk losing a guy like Abdul Carter who's cost-controlled for 5 years. I understand all of that, but you've shown no desire to wait this thing out and trust Elliott Wolf's drafting skills again. You've shown no interest in doing that. And I can't blame you. Other than nailing the pick that you were supposed to nail in Drake May and finding a quarterback in Joe Milton that, again, played one good game against second stringers for the Buffalo Bills, I don't trust what I'm getting in this draft room. So why not take the risk out of it and make a move for a proven commodity? Because you've addressed your defense. The one thing that you have left to do that you can say that you have not completed as a mission this offseason, you fixed you redid your coaching staff, that's done. You built up your defense with proven veterans, that's done. Your offense, incomplete. You're missing a left tackle. And to Brian's point, and something I would agree with, you're missing a wide receiver one. You have a guy who's going to be your top wide receiver, but he's not a top wide receiver in football. I love the thought of Drake May dropping back to pass and A.J. Brown's on one side of him and Stephon Diggs is on the other. That's a damn good offense. Would you worry about the egos and I need to get the ball? No, I would not, because both guys are coming out of offenses where they had very good wide receivers around them. It's not like Diggs is coming straight from Buffalo where he was the number one and he was getting a crazy high target share, and other than a couple deep bombs to Gabe Davis, he was the guy all the time. He's coming out of a Houston offense where he was the second, if not third, option. He was still very productive, 7th in the league in receptions when he got hurt. But he was far from the traditional wide receiver one in that Houston offense. A.J. Brown was the wide receiver one in Philadelphia, still is, because this probably isn't going to happen. But he's going to come into a situation in a very similar spot on the depth chart where he's number one, but there's a very capable number two behind him. And this takes so much pressure off of the ragged group of receivers that you have behind Stephon Diggs on the depth chart as well. So if for some reason this actually manifests itself and it's real, and again, there are so many different factors that all have to go right. Abdul Carter falling to 4 is maybe the most hard to fathom one out of all of this, because unless the Giants do something abnormal, unless they saw something extraordinary in those quarterback workouts that they had this past week, and they make the decision to go QB at 3, or they make a trade or something, I'd be hard pressed not to believe it's not going to go some order of Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, and then Abdul Carter, and then you're just forced to pick, I would assume, Will Campbell, maybe Armon Membu. I don't know. So he has to drop. That's number one. You have to find a way around that dead cap number, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm an economist and know how to deal with that. So you're going to have to get past those two things. But if you can jump those two massive hurdles and we get to the reality where A.J. Brown can be had, and it's Brown plus for Abdul Carter, yes, all day and twice on 420. Are you kidding me? That's a proven champion, wide receiver one, and I don't really care how much he has left in his prime. If you get 2 to 3 good years out of A.J. Brown, do you know how important that's going to be for Drake May's development and the kind of quarterback that you'll get after those 2 to 3 years of having those two weapons around him? I'm all in on the possibility of this. I would just caution, and again, this was said in certain terms in the response to the initial post that was put up at WEEI Afternoons, if you don't follow the account. Some people were not quite as polite about it as Brian and I have been, but there are a lot of different hoops that you have to jump through in order to get to this reality, but it's a fun one, man. And we've heard that scuttlebutt, and Brian, you've probably heard the same thing. It's just in the deepest, darkest corners of Patriots rumors, they still want to make some kind of splash. And I don't know if that manifests itself in A.J. Brown. I don't know if it's Colton Miller.
Well, and we've heard Greg Bedard continue to repeat that there could be a big trade come draft day for the Patriots. Like, yep. We keep hearing it. We asked Curran about it, I think, a few weeks ago on WEEI Afternoons. And no one's really turning down the idea that the Patriots want to make a big trade on draft day. Now, whether that's for a player, whether that's just to move down in the draft, we don't know yet.
Right.
But, yeah, nobody's really shooting down any big moves to the Patriots.
And I love that because you've been aggressive to this point on the other side of the ball. I think you'd be remiss if you didn't try to take a big swing on the offensive side of the football and help your quarterback, because that's your most prized asset at this point. You're going to go as far as Drake May can take you, so why not surround him with the pieces as best as possible that you can to try to put him in the best spot to be successful. Okay, if you want to join the conversation, do you like the A.J. Brown idea? Are there trades that are on your radar come draft day for the New England Patriots? We'll continue to sort through what the Pats can do at number 4. Do they even stick at number 4? As Brian mentioned, there could be some kind of blockbuster deal out there to where after months and months of bluster about, oh, they're going to take Will Campbell, they're going to take Ashton Jeanty, all this stuff that we had to stomach for the last few months. What if they don't even make that number 4 pick? That would be a pretty funny way to wrap all of this up. But we'll continue Patriots talk. Don't forget, we also have the Celtics on the table. They begin their title defense today. Red Sox play game 3 of their 4-game series against the White Sox. And somehow, Jeremy Swayman is being mentioned in a trade rumor. I think that's bonkers. But we'll get to all of that and more with your calls at 617-779-7937. After Brian Frazoco, get you caught up on what's trending.
Jones and Keefe, weekdays 10 to 2.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Here's what's trending now on WEI and on WEI.com. The Celtics title defense up against today as Boston takes on the Orlando Magic for Game 1 of the Eastern Conference quarterfinals today with tip-off from TD Garden at 3:30. Other Game 1s today include the Thunder hosting the Grizzlies at 1 o'clock, the Heat visiting the number 1 seeded Cavaliers at 7 o'clock, and the day wraps up with Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors visiting Houston to take on the Rockets. The NBA playoffs got underway for 8 other teams yesterday, with the Pacers taking Game 1 over the Bucks, Nuggets winning in overtime against the LA Clippers. You had the Knicks securing an 11-point win over the Pistons at Madison Square Garden, and the surprise of the day with the Timberwolves beating LeBron James, Luka Doncic, and the Lakers in Los Angeles by a score of 117-105. Garrett Crochet struck out 7, and Tristan Cassis played the role of the hero yesterday as he walked off the White Sox in extra innings to help give the Red Sox their 4th straight win. Here was Alex Cora speaking about Cassis after the game.
Well, more aggressive, with more conviction. He took a walk today, and that's important. In that situation, just put the ball in play. He has that way. So did a good job staying with the pitch, and we got the W.
Game 3 of this 4-game series is today with first pitch from Fenway Park, scheduled for 1:35, and we'll have the call of that game for you right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Pre-game starts at 12:35 with the MassMutual pregame show hosted by our very own Dan Ball. The NHL playoffs got underway yesterday with a pair of game ones. President's Trophy winning Winnipeg Jets took down the Blues 5-3, and the Avalanche steamrolled the Stars in Dallas by a score of 5-1. 3 more games take place today, I should say, with the Devils visiting the Hurricanes at 3 o'clock, the Senators facing the Maple Leafs at 7 o'clock. And the late game has the Wild in Las Vegas to take on old friend Bruce Cassidy and the Golden Knights. I'm Brian Fraserco. That's what's trending on WEI and on WEI.com.
WEI, WEI, New England Sports Original. Dan Ball on WEI.
Who do the Patriots end up taking there with the fourth overall pick?
It's Will Campbell.
Yes!
I've made my case against why I wouldn't do it, but he checks a lot of needs for them. And then the hope is that you'll start him in left tackle and that he proves he belongs there. And if you talk to people who are being realistic, I don't think people really want to tell you. His tape last year wasn't that great. Like, I'm not talking bad, but I'm not talking top four pick in the draft good. It's just something that people have kind of glossed over because they like the player and they like, obviously, there's a need here. So pump him up as much as you can.
Yes! That sound clip was a couple different things. That was the emphatic yes of Andy Hart, the question of Ted Johnson, and Mike Giardi raining on our parade with Will Campbell and his short arms. Thank you, Teddy. He leaves me speechless too. 617-779-7937. The tape on Will Campbell is not great. We'll get back to the draft in just a moment, cleaning up some of the texts. This one made me laugh during the break. Dan, respectfully, Elliot Wolf will not be making any decisions for the forthcoming draft. He's getting coffee and moving the magnets around. He's been a failure, and Vrabel will not trust his input. While I think that him running and getting coffee is a bit pejorative, I would agree. I think the Tom Curran continued narrative of being against Elliot Wolf, he's not the only one, but he was the one on BST a couple days ago that was really kind of going in on Wolf. Wolf is the one piece that doesn't fit right now in the front office. Like he and I guess Matt Groh would apply to this as well. But of the frontward facing members of the Patriots front office, you have Vrabel and Ryan Cowden, who was brought in right after that, in one corner, and then you kind of have Elliot Wolf in the other. And so the question then becomes, well, where do the Crafts stand on all of this? Are they team football czar? Do they want Mike Vrabel to have full autonomy to make roster decisions a la what they had with Belichick for years and years prior? Or do they value Elliot Wolf's opinion? And I don't know the answer. I know what fans would say to that. I certainly know the answer to that question, but that one made me laugh nonetheless. A couple different texts coming from the 413. Historically, rookie receivers under McDaniels' complex offensive system, they struggle. They are better off trading for an elite receiver. Sorry, Polk and Baker are bust. No disagreements out of me. How about trading with Denver for Cortland Sutton? He's not A.J. Brown, but is close to a number one receiver. Coming off of his age 29 season, 1,081 receiving yards for Cortland Sutton. Second year of his career where he got over 1,000 receiving yards, 8 touchdowns, which was 2 away from his career high, which he set the year prior. His contract is set to expire after the 2025 season. So it's probably going to cost less. I know that he's been mentioned in rumors, but it's conflicting reports because I've heard rumors that he's been available for years, but I've also seen stories that the Broncos have turned down trade offers for Cortland Sutton. So I'm all in on insert name here, veteran wide receiver, whoever that ends up being, one more guy to add to this mix. Because I think Diggs, Pop Douglas, and on down is better than what you had last year. But I also think that you're truly one player away. If you add another wide receiver and you add a left tackle that doesn't have short arms, I mean, what else are you missing? I guess a running back that doesn't have butterfingers, but you could probably at least find somebody to add a bit of competition in day two, if not day three of the draft. So.
Also, just quickly on that rookie McDaniels thing, was it a McDaniels thing that new receivers didn't do well, or was it a Tom Brady thing? Because Brady made the offense so complex. Because when Davante Adams first got to the Raiders in 2022, McDaniels was the head coach. Now, the team didn't have a lot of success, but Davante Adams had over 1,500 yards receiving. So was it a McDaniels thing that made the offense so complex, or was it so complex because Brady had been working in that offense for 20 years?
It's a fair point. The one thing I would say with Adams is that he wasn't a rookie coming into that situation.
True, but we saw veteran receivers, Chad Ochocinco, for example, come to New England and and struggle to learn the offense. A super talented guy coming here with Brady, who'd already been in the offense for, what, 10, 15 years at that point?
Yeah.
To me, I always felt like Brady made the offense more complex. I don't want to say than it needed to be, because obviously you look at the success, but he made it more complex than Josh McDaniels did.
And I think there's a third factor into all of this. Did the receivers that Belichick was drafting just blow?
Right.
Like, I think that's also a fair
It's not like they went anywhere and did anything. So
no, exactly.
It could be an indictment on the receivers, too.
No disrespect to Kembrell Tompkins and Nikhil Harry and the rest of them, but it's not like these guys were all world somewhere else and Tom Brady couldn't make them good wide receivers.
Right.
So it's a point that's well taken as the wide receiver conversation continues. Barry in New Bedford joins us. Barry, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Listen, can we stop this AJ Brown stuff?
Okay.
Really? He's not being traded.
I know.
Period.
I know.
Because of the dead cap hit. And Colton Miller, I keep asking people, have the Raiders put out there that they're trading him?
No. It's more just speculation because he's not at their offseason workout program and he needs a contract extension.
And when you think that the left tackle is so weak in this draft class, I don't see them trading him quickly on the Patriots. I don't think they're going to be at four by the time we get to the draft starts.
Okay.
I think they're moving the pick with the Bears because there are two or three teams that want to get ahead of Jacksonville and the Raiders to take Ashton Jeanty.
Okay, Barry, thank you for the call. Quick and to the point with a number of different details, which I appreciate, Barry from New Bedford. Listen, I know that A.J. Brown is probably not going to be a New England Patriot. More than likely, almost assuredly not going to be a New England Patriot. Dead cap out the wazoo. Very competitive team in Philadelphia. Just because he played for Mike Vrabel doesn't mean the Patriots automatically get him. Thank you. I don't know if that's in support of me or of the A.J. Brown trade from Andy, but I like it either way. I understand that this is a pie-in-the-sky type thing, but if I'm to believe that a blockbuster is still out there, let me believe in this a little bit. Let me hang on to hope for a little bit. But to the other point that was made about the Patriots not sticking at number four, I would completely agree with that, and I'd be fine with that. This is the kind of draft class that allows other teams to be stupid. And that's what you need to enable here. So if Travis Hunter's still on the board, make the pick. If Abdul Carter's still on the board, assuming that A.J. Brown is not realistic, make the pick. Those guys are blue chip prospects. They'll be good players. I know that there's some bluster going around about Travis Hunter maybe being a bust. Well, is he really elite on either side of the ball? I'm more than willing for you to draft him and find that out yourself. So if for some reason somebody does something ahead of you that allows one of those two players to shake loose, I'm fine with that. If not, let another team be stupid. Let them make the mistake. If they really want Ashton Jeanty, if they really want Jackson Dart, if they really want Shedeur Sanders, if they really want Tyler Warren, if they want a weapon, Tet McMillan, God knows. But if there's another team that wants to jump up to four to try to make the high-risk pick, that's the one thing that you can't do. I don't want you at number four overall. In an admittedly weak draft class, there's no reason for you after what's been a pretty solid, well-detailed offseason where you've made some good, responsible investments. Don't throw caution to the wind now. Don't just pick a player at number four for the sake of picking a player at number four.
Doesn't that feel like that's what they would do by drafting Will Campbell?
Yeah, I guess.
Like, we're going to do something that no other team can do by drafting a tackle with short arms.
Right.
You know, like, if the Eagles were to do it, or some other team, Baltimore even, I get it then. Then you're like, you have somewhat of a track record. I probably disagree with the pick, but I feel like you guys can probably figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't think the Patriots have that track record over the last 5-6 years where they can try to think that they're smarter than everybody and do something that nobody else could do by drafting a tackle with the arm length that he has.
Yes.
So to me, that just doesn't feel like everyone says, oh, it's a safe pick. Like, worst case scenario, he's just a Pro Bowl guard. No, the worst case scenario is he can't play in the league.
That's right. Yes, exactly. And that's my point. You're not picking nobody that you and I and anybody else have heard, Brian. Nobody's saying pick Will Campbell because he's elite. Nobody's saying pick him because he's your Joe Alt. He's going to be your generational left tackle, and he and Drake May are going to ride off into the sunset together. They're saying take Will Campbell because you need a tackle, and he is supposed to be a very good, if not the best tackle in this draft class. He's the lesser of the evils that you're taking. So if your choice is make a trade, move down, and take best player available, take Armon Membu, take whatever's available at 6, 7, or 8, and you can accumulate more capital. If that's choice A and choice B is just pick Will Campbell for the sake of saying that, oh, well, we picked a tackle. Why not trade down? There's going to be at least one team in this league that is willing to trade up with you to do something dumb. And I tell you, I advocate for you on these airwaves, let them. You want to take Shedeur number 4? You think he's going to change your franchise? Go right ahead. You want to take Ashton Jeanty at 4 and you want to say that, you know, you read his letter that he posted where he said, take the guy that can't be tackled and you want to see him prove it? Be my guest. There are teams that are in situations either where they can take that complimentary piece like a running back or a tight end or a wide receiver if you want to throw McMillan in that conversation. There are teams that are in that position and you can let them. And there are teams that just don't know what they're doing and are going to risk it for that flashy piece. Let them. Are you going to get multiple first-round picks in years to follow? Are you going to get this crazy haul for number 4? No. Unless a Carter or a Hunter is there, and in that case, just take the player. That's fine. Assuming that they're not, and it goes chalk, Ward, Hunter, Carter, in one order or another, assuming that that's what happens, you will be able to get some, maybe another day 2 piece. Maybe something sprinkled in on day 3. It's not going to be this crazy haul, but it's worth more than what you're going to get. Do you get 6, 7, or 8 overall, plus a second or third round pick, whatever it ends up being? Maybe throw a six or a seven in there as well. That's your hypothetical package. So you can get 3 players out of this versus 1 player that you're not even really sold on. In just for lack of a better answer, Will Campbell, I'm all in on stack up those picks and see what you can get on day 2 and day 3. Because if you're not sure with your number 4 overall pick what you want to do, why not be sure 3 times and make 3 different picks versus just making the 1? And, well, all right, well, we took a tackle. We took this guy. People had him high on their board, so we took him. That's not good enough. That's not good enough. I don't think it's responsible asset management. So I am all for team trade down. And to the point that Brian brought up and Barry brought up in the call just a few moments prior, if there's a player that you can include in a blockbuster, and I know Colton Miller hasn't been put on the trade block publicly. He's not, you know, sitting out in the middle of the town square with a big sign on him that says trade me. But you have to look at past situations in contract negotiations and how some of these things have turned out. Half the time it leads to a big old fat contract extension. Oh, we're not going to negotiate. I'm not showing up. Oh, well, here's all the money in the world. That happens sometimes. But other times, this leads to trades. He's not at the voluntary offseason workout program. He needs a contract extension. He's a good player. Las Vegas certainly needs tackles. Every team needs a tackle. But are they in a position to compete, or are they in a position to acquire draft assets and start a rebuild of their own? I think it's a fair question. Do they see value at number 4 overall? And, pardon me, is there a pick swap that could include Colton Miller that could happen there? These are all conversations I'm having. And Brian, all of these conversations have moved to X, Y, or Z on the draft board and acquire talent that are known commodities, very similar to what we just talked about with A.J. Brown. A known commodity in exchange for moving down on the draft board versus throw a dart at Will Campbell and hope that you land in the bullseye. I just like that better. I feel like that's more responsible roster building.
Yeah, more kicks at the can, right?
Exactly.
Give this front office that really hasn't proven that they can draft. And again, we were talking earlier, who's really in charge, right? But we've seen Elliott Wolf struggle at making certain draft picks. Really, I think the only two he hit on happened to be both quarterbacks, potentially. I know we're sort of moved on from the Joe Milton discussion.
Yeah, but thankfully, by the way.
Vrabel, even in Tennessee, you know, and he bringing in, you know, stretch Ryan Cowden, you know, his friend, like they had up and down drafts. Yeah, they nailed the 2019 draft, bringing in Jeffrey Simmons in the first round, bringing in AJ Brown in the second round.
Yeah.
But you look at some of these other drafts, especially along the offensive line, and they leave you scratching your head. There are guys whose names you don't remember, guys you've probably never heard of. They're defensive backs who I think played like four or five games with Tennessee. Like, they had some questionable drafts as well. Now, I don't know how much draft capital they had in those drafts. I don't remember off the top of my head. But I think getting more kicks at the can, especially in a draft that everybody says might be deeper than it is top-heavy just in terms of overall talent, I think getting more kicks at the can, whether it's later in the first round, second round, third round picks, just trying to accumulate talent, because yes, they brought in a lot of talent in free agency, and I sort of use that talent in quotations because I don't think there were any huge name free agents, but they brought in some players to fill some holes. Exactly.
Veterans, yeah.
They brought in players to fill the holes that they had. I think they still need some talent, and I think just trying to, like I said, take more kicks at the can, I think can bring in guys that, you know, throw a lot of crap against the wall, hope a couple of them stick.
Yeah, well, well put. That certainly seems to be what they're going for. But 617-779-7937 is the phone number if you want to jump in on the conversation. Patriots are still on the table, but when we return, we will pivot to the Boston Bruins. We just talked about trades for a few moments. There has been a trade that has been floated by Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet and involves the Boston Bruins' embattled goaltender and Jeremy Swayman. We'll play some of that audio for you next here on WEEI.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
As you can tell, I've been talking to teams who might need some goaltending, or I've been looking around goaltending. I do think there are going to be teams that call the Bruins about Swayman. And his no move doesn't kick in for another year, 26-27. Now, if I was them, I would say that this whole year went off the rails, as I said, before it started. Put in a good summer. Don't do any interviews. Just show up in great shape. Be ready to go.
Every day, we be burning, not concerning what nobody wanna say. We be earning, not understanding, cause we mind it, but we pay. More than gold.
Now, Brian, all these things tie together, right?
Oh, yeah, a couple connections here.
It's April 20th, otherwise known as 420.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Easter.
Oh, that too. This is a song that implies a certain usage of a certain substance that may or may not be tied to 420. And Elliott Friedman,
this audio from today?
It was from the 32 Thoughts podcast from Sportsnet yesterday.
Okay.
So maybe he was celebrating early.
I was going to say, he must have gotten an early start then.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what you have to take as a as an NHL insider to float Jeremy Swayman being traded. But it's something I'd like to experience, that's for sure. Back here on WEEI, 617-779-7937. I'm just going to read some numbers, and we'll see what kind of picture they paint. 58 games, 58 starts, 22 wins, 29 losses, 7 ties. Overtime losses. Or
seven!
Shootout losses, thank you. 176 goals against, which leads the National Hockey League. Thank you. He made 1,456 saves. That doesn't matter. An 892 save percentage and a 311 goals against average. That is how Jeremy Swayman finished the 2024-25 NHL regular season. He played just shy of 3,400 minutes. That is by far a career high. He played just north of 2,500 minutes last year. So, going up from 44 games this year to 58 games, or last year to 58 games this year, was the jump that you were expecting from Jeremy Swayman, and you compensated him in the form of a top five goaltender in the NHL, sixth in average annual value, tied for fifth in total contract value for Jeremy Swayman.
Ew.
And that was the gross sound effect to highlight the disgusting effort that was put forth. So that was Elliott Friedman floating the idea that teams in the NHL would be interested in trading for Jeremy Swayman. Now, let's talk about the good. The good is that he is still a career 910 save percentage goaltender with a goals against average just north of 250. Those are both very good numbers. He is coming off of his age 26 season. He was a fourth-round pick out of Alaska, played for Maine, and up until this year had pretty much done everything right from the minor leagues up to being a backup to being a tandem goaltender with Linus Ullmark. He was rock solid. Proof positive being the year before, 253 goals against average and a 916 save percentage. Up until this year, there were no warts. Save percentages of 945, 914, 920, 916 for Swayman in his first 4 years. You take Ullmark out of the equation, Swayman's your starter, he blows up. Now, there is also certainly an argument to be made. You have to point to the defense in front of him and say, this is also partially on you. Are they responsible for a drop in save percentage of 24 points? No, they're not. But they're responsible for part of it. And especially when you were missing, I think Hampus Lindholm being out, forcing Nikita Zadorov into a number one defenseman role. I know you paid him that kind of money, but that's not the kind of player he is. So with no Lindholm for an extended period of time, then you lose McAvoy after the Four Nations. It got pretty ugly. Congratulations to Mason Lorai, by the way, for having the worst plus-minus of any player in the NHL this year. Kind of hard to do. So that's the kind of defense that you were dealing with in front of Swayman this year. But I'm sorry, that contract of north of $8 million, that thing's unmovable. If there is a team that's willing to engage you in that conversation, they're probably going to try to have you retain, and we can't be having this conversation. For a guy that you went through hell and back to try to get this contract done with, he's now on the books for another, what, seven seasons after all of this? And the conversation that we're having after year one is trade him?
Seven!
God. What a disaster. No, I'm as much as I would love to see, probably love to see the reaction of him getting moved, there might be a duck boat parade just to take him to Logan. I don't think there's going to be a team that's willing to take all of that money and all of that risk for a guy that's proven exactly nothing as a starter in the league. A bona fide number one starter in this league. 60 games is kind of your number. He played 58. I'm going to round it up to 60. 60 is your number. If you're a number one goalie in the NHL, that's the games played total that you're trying to get. You have a backup that plays 20-ish games, and that's how you get through the season. So he's there, and he's proven nothing. I find it hard to believe that there is actually a team that's going to engage you in trade talks and take that full contract. And even if they do, now what do you do? If I'm to believe that this Bruins debacle is a retool and not a rebuild, that you're not blowing this thing up, that you are going to acquire assets during free agency, at the draft, and in the offseason that are going to make you a competitive team in 2025-26, and you trade Swayman, well, then what? What do I do now? I'm not starting Korpisalo. So you then create another problem for yourself. I don't know. I don't know if there's a win at this point. I think you have to try to make something out of this guy. That's my personal opinion is that you have him on the books. There's no way somebody's going to take the full contract. You might as well try to get whether it's actual positional coaching, how to deal with rebounds, because it seems like he forgot how to do that this year, or if it's mental stuff, that you have to try to make something out of this asset. As soon as I saw Bob's name on our call screener, I knew exactly what this was going to be about. Because we've had this conversation before on the show.
He was fired up already.
Well, let's get right to him before our break. Bob is in Londonderry. Bob, I know that you knew that Jeremy Swayman was a bust, so the floor is yours, my friend.
Well, I was just agreeing what you were saying. We're in really bad shape with this guy. Yes, as an average work, he's a decent goalie. He could be considered good. You're never winning a Stanley Cup with him. He's not of that level. And I said from the beginning, this is going to go. You're doing another Tukarask. And sure enough, you gave him this money, and it's been an absolute failure. And I will say this. You can keep waiting and hoping and praying. Stop short of having the Pope bless him or something. You're going to get the same results. So the Bruins still not only need help everywhere, now they're still needing a goaltender. And this is just not going to correct itself. And people who think it is, they could be right. I could be wrong. I'll be calling you later. And this is where we're at. And it's terrible to perform like this and get paid and fail. And it's okay. No one cares. What an ass jack this guy is.
Bob, happy Easter, and thank you for the call. I knew that would not disappoint. All right, Brian, let's hit a break. Let's continue this on the other side, though, because Swayman spoke during Locker Cleanout Day once again and had people upset. We'll continue the Bruins conversation into hour number two. We make the turn for 11 a.m. after this here on WEEI.